Hey everyone, thanks so much for checking out the podcast. Today we have Shane Craig, so something a little bit different on the channel today, and I'm excited to have him on the channel to bring a little bit of a different perspective. Shane Craig's not fully in the retro gaming scene, but does a lot of retro gaming videos. So let's get into it. Maybe Shane, if you just want to say a little bit about who you are and what your channel is about.
Yeah, so first off, thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here. Should be a lot of fun. Like you said, I'm not, you know, a full retro gaming channel, but I do a decent amount of that stuff. When a console pops up that's interesting to me, you know, I'll cover it, and I'll do reviews and little tutorials and things like that. But more broadly though, I cover kind of oddball stuff, like most, you know, people in my space are covering traditional phones and tablets and things like that. Well, for me, I'm more into, you know, weird phones, folding phones, and just kind of oddball devices. I like to dive into that niche. I was thinking about this the other day. I think I've got a little bit of a lean towards like a counterculture thing, where it's like, if everybody is like, this is the phone to use, I'm like, I'm not using that one. Like, I got to use something else. Like, so I'm always looking for, I don't know what that is exactly, but that's the way I go. I go towards the oddball things. That's kind of my channel. I think that's in like my tagline is like, I'm going to focus on oddball devices. So if you like folding phones and just weird tech, that's what I'm usually doing.
Okay, cool. Yeah. For me, looking at your channel from the outside, when I end up on your videos, it's always like the alternative view, like everyone's saying this, but Shane's thinking, well, what about this, you know, which is great. I think it's really important to have that, you know. Like the RG35XX. So the way we connected, sorry, getting a bit of Earl Grey in there. The way we connected was, I was looking for as many, so my reviews are quite comprehensive, and I like to reference as many solutions to problems as I can. You know, if I don't have the time to go down that rabbit hole, whatever it is, if I didn't get time to like consoleize the device fully, I will reference someone's video and put it in and all that. So I referenced your D-pad fix for the RG35XX, which I found really, really useful. And funny enough, not many people were talking about that sort of thing at the time, and it became commonplace. Like now everyone's like, oh yeah, do the D-pad fix. And I don't know who did it first. I think you were one of the first guys to kind of make it popular. I'm sure there were a lot of nerds in the world doing it, but you kind of made it a more public. So that was useful, and actually a very useful tip in the video. I think it's one of the things that made my video successful, was to have those good solid references in there. So yeah, you definitely bring a nice flavor and always a different angle, but a useful angle. And I think that's probably something you focus on now.
Yeah. So a big thing that I try to do is I try to focus on answering a question. And in particular, when a company, you know, sends me something like the RG35XX, which was my like entry into the retro gaming handheld space, I'm not just gonna like review it and move on. I'm gonna review it, and then I'm gonna look and see, okay, what questions did I have? Where did I need to go to Google and be like, okay, how do I fix this? How do I do that? And then I'm gonna try to, as succinctly and clearly as I can, I'm going to try to answer those questions for other people. And it tends to be the case that if you do that halfway decently, people are going to search for it and you're going to pop up. If you know how to title your videos, you know how to do thumbnails, they're going to find you, and then you're going to be providing value to them, and inevitably they're going to come back for more. So that's definitely an angle. You know, I'm trying to make things easier. I'm trying to make things easier for the next person than it was for me, basically.
I mean, it's interesting, like every person I speak to, I kind of analyze why they're successful, the pitfalls of the way they're doing things and that kind of thing. And there's pros and cons to each type of thing that each person does. And like the huge benefit of what you do is that you tend to pick up on things that, let's say, for instance, I make a deep dive, comprehensive review of the RG35XX, and you were like, I used this for a while, and these are the highlights of the things that really annoyed me. And like in the process of doing my review, I kind of just gloss over those things because they're like, well, I fixed those issues. I can, you know, but those are often the things that people say to me, yeah, but that step, you made it look so easy, but that was a pain in my life. Like that took me a week of my life to fix that step. And I think the way that you do things tends to answer those questions that guys like me tend to overlook sometimes.
That could definitely be fair, and it it to me, you know, I've been doing this for a few years now, and we may talk about this later, but I post a ton. Like I post 50, 60 videos a month. It's just how I do what I do. So I am, I'm always looking for content ideas. So little things that other people might go, that's nothing, move on. That's an 8-minute video.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's an 8-minute video that I look back on and I go, that really didn't do anything. But other times I look back, like that, you know, D-pad fix that's got over 30,000 views, you know, I look back and I go, that was a good one. Yeah. You don't really know.
Good question. Yeah.
You don't really know either until it's out there. It's real, like, you know, my ability to predict, especially early on, like what was going to be that video that was going to do tens of thousands of views, which was going to do like 1,000 and peter out, I would be like, I have no idea. So what I started doing is I just started swinging at every ball that came over the plate.
Yes.
It's going to work or it's not. But either way, I'm posting every day. And every video, even if it doesn't, even if you don't, you know, crack that ball and send it into the stands, it's still better than not posting that day. It's still something. You're getting some views. Someone might subscribe. So that was my mindset. Was like, I'm just going to get after it and post and post and post and answer every question I can. And like you mentioned, that, you know, might result in me surfacing topics that other people didn't think was worth the time.
Yeah, that is a very good point, because you're always digging for content. And I just thought, you know, because I gave a tip for kind of guys looking to get into the tech scene from, I interviewed, I don't know if you're Rob, Retro Tech Dad. He does these like deep dive videos, very comprehensive videos. And I gave a few tips to like guys wanting to start in the tech scene. And I think the tip from you is anybody that's looking to get into YouTube, go through Shane Craig's feed and go, what worked and what didn't work? Because there's so much content, and say you could build an algorithm from your work, you know, and there's a huge benefit to that for you as well. I mean, I'm sure you finding, like in the beginning, you were just throwing and whatever stuck, you're like, okay, whatever. And now it's like more things are sticking, I'm guessing.
Oh yeah. Yeah, definitely. I'm at a point now where more often than not, I might run into a rut maybe once every 3 weeks where I'll post a couple of videos and I'm like, those were swings and misses. But I'd say 90% of videos are doing pretty well at this point, at least by my standards. I'm never going to be one of these dudes is, you know, 1 million views per video. Like that's insanity. But like for me on the scale that I'm at, you know, where I post so many videos, I don't need them to do 50,000 a piece. I need them to do maybe a couple thousand a piece. And at the end of a month, hey, that's 500,000 views. And guess what? My bills are paid. So like, that's all I'm after. And if I do better than that, great. If I don't, if I stay where I'm at and I just keep doing this forever, I'll do this till I'm 70. Like I'm good. This is fine. So.
Yeah. I suppose that's the negative of doing it the way you're doing it is the vanity metrics. Like, you know, like you said, there's guys who get 1 million views every video. It takes them a couple of weeks to make the video, but they get like millions of views. Whereas someone might go to your channel and go, oh, but he only got a few hundred views on this one. Oh, that's a couple of thousand. Like not much is happening on this channel. But like, for instance, you and I were chatting and then we got into stats and like metrics of our channels, and you sent me the metrics and I was like, oh shit, this guy's like doing solid numbers, you know? Mm-hmm. It's just that you're doing a much bigger body of work in the same space of time that I am, you know? And so,
it's a different way to do it.
The overall picture, that's quite impressive. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a different way to do it for sure. And it's, for me, it wasn't like I looked at them as like, you know, I didn't look at these as two options for me. Like there was the way that I could do it, which is the way that I am doing it. And then there's the way that I can't do it. I look at people who do, you know, the crazy production value and they've got all this, you know, beautiful B-roll and, you know, that's great. I am not capable of doing that. That is not how my brain works.
Yeah.
It's not that I'm not that guy. I've said from the beginning, before I did this YouTube channel, I did a couple of podcasts years ago. I see what I'm doing as almost, I'm basically posting a ton of little mini podcasts that happen to have a visual element. That's what I'm doing. I'm podcasting. And it works for me. Will it work for the next person? Could the average person sit down and post twice a day, every day for 3 years? Probably not. Most people probably burn out, but that's how my brain is wired. If something happens in the tech world, you better believe I can sit down and talk about it for 8 or 10 minutes. I love that stuff. So it's easy for me, but it's not easy for everyone. You have to find the way that works for you and hope that works for everyone else.
It's super interesting because it brings up another point is because I was looking at my friend Shem, who's the next episode that's about to load on the channel. And what was the point of the story? We all bring like a different piece of the puzzle and everyone does things a little differently, you know? Here's the thing. So what I said to Rob from Retro Tech Dad is have you watched Tech Dweeb? His channel, the hands with the stripy t-shirt with the funny voice. Mm-hmm. So now I interviewed Tech Dweeb and then I've got Rob. Now Rob is this very comprehensive like guy that gives these very detailed videos with like high production level as well. He's got some really nice B-roll and all that. Then you got Tech Dweeb, which is almost like half comedy. Well, I mean, it is. I mean, he's putting on a whole character, the whole thing.
Right.
And if you look at those two guys and you try to make like an algorithm, what works in this space of tech, like you'd be like, either one of them shouldn't be existing. Like they shouldn't both be able to exist in the world, you know, but they both are pretty much at the same level, subscriber base and growth and everything.
Yep.
So it is interesting that we all, this is where the point I wanted to make is I think you have to stick to, especially most of us are solo creators. We don't have a team like Linus. We're just doing this on our own. You have to keep doing stuff that you know you can sustain over the next 20 years, you know, whether it lasts that long or not, just that's where you need to be. Where I ended up on Shem's channel and I was like, why is he making a video about this thing? And I realized it's because he loves it. And you know, and he made a video a while back. And at the time of it loading, I was like, oh, Shem, it's a really cool video, but it's bombing. It's got 15,000 views now because he was passionate about that thing, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that's very important.
Yeah, absolutely. That sustainability thing is absolutely huge. And what I would encourage anybody that wants to get into this stuff to do is just try it, give it, you know, depending on what your posting schedule, you want it to be, give it a month, give it 6 months. And you'll know if you finish that period, you're going to look back and go, I can't do that. Like, that's not going to work for me. Like but there's never a better time to start trying than now. Like if my biggest regret is that when I was 15, I hadn't already started doing this because I look back and I'm like, I just hit 40,000 subscribers yesterday. And I started 3 years
ago. Well done, man.
Thank you. I'm 34. Imagine if I had started when I was 15. Imagine where I would be. That's my biggest regret. Why did I waste my time doing, you know, like a normal job? Like, why didn't I just go straight to this?
Yeah. Yeah. And then on the flip side for me, I've been doing this for so long. I know that this is something that I want to do, and it's not something that I like. To get onto one of the topics we're going to talk about, like I mentioned to you, that I don't know, we started talking just as I got diagnosed with ADHD and it's just the craziest thing to get that diagnosis and you like ripple through your whole life for the like about 5 months after that diagnosis. There were so many things I just went through and I was like, oh yeah, ADHD. And now I forgot the point of the story.
It's a good direction though, because you're absolutely right that like you spend that next amount of time and you're just solving riddles that you've had in your head for years. You're just like, oh, that was okay. Got it. Like stuff. You're like, I never understood why I was like that or why that happened. And now you're like, now I know. Like it's just revelation after revelation.
Yes. Oh yeah. And that is the point of it is like, I throughout my life, I mean, I'm 43 now. I have started and stopped so many things. And I always put it down to, I'm not passionate about it. I'm not into it anymore. And funny enough, like YouTube, because I've had different iterations of what I've done on YouTube and I just haven't given up. Like it's something that keeps me motivated, keeps me focused, keeps me passionate. at the same time, there's always an element of work. Like, for instance, I need to make a video about, I didn't pick the RG35XXH. I need to make a video about that thing. And it just feels like work. And that's where I have to really push myself. But overall, it's the first thing in my life that I've just done perpetually over and over again for years. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, I say I've been doing this for 3 years. I've been doing 3 years for, you know, full time. But prior to this iteration of this channel, there were other channels, there were other projects, there were websites that, you know, that I wrote for, that I own and had. Like, I literally had a gaming news website that I had like five or six people on, this little staff of mine that, you know, like, I've been doing this kind of thing. I'll go way back to the beginnings, the origins of me wanting to be a nerdy person talking about stuff on the internet. When I was, gosh, I must have been maybe 11 or 12. I made my first website talking about the card game Yu-Gi-Oh! Duel Monsters.
Okay.
Way back.
Very nerdy. Yes.
Very nerdy. I still have, by the way, I still have my deck from all those years ago. It's in the other room. I'll never let it go. I haven't touched it. I don't play it for, you know, 15 years, but I'm keeping it. I worked hard for that thing. Mm-hmm. But I've always wanted to do something like this. And it took, you know, obviously the Yu-Gi-Oh thing wasn't it. And then I did gaming stuff for a long time, and I never, the website did okay. You know, like, we got to where we were doing all right. And then, you know, me and my wife had a gaming podcast and it did okay.
Okay.
But I would always do it for so long and then I would burn out because it just wasn't quite the right subject matter for me. It wasn't until I literally on a whim made a video on my current channel, which prior had been mostly kind of like random gaming content, just an outlet for me. I made a video about a very strange phone from Microsoft that I just thought was really strange and interesting. And it got like 1,000 views. And I was like, oh, this is interesting. And then I made another one and it got 1,000 views. And I was like, okay. And I just kind of just started iterating. And that's kind of where it took off from, you know, it was, and it just so happened that truly, that's the space that I'm not going to burn out on phones and weird tech like that. And it was that I never really thought I could do that kind of content. And I just kind of randomly did a one-off video and kind of realized maybe I can, and off the races after that.
Cool. Yeah. I always had a passion for this, even early days, like teenager when cell phones started coming out. And then I don't even remember a website called GSM Arena. They still make YouTube videos. But they used to be the source of information on any cell phone that came out. I just wanted to do that, man. Like, my entire life I've wanted to do that. And then I got into like Android YouTubers a while back and I was like, maybe I should do this. This is like the core of like what I love about YouTube and about tech and everything.
Yeah.
Anyway, the retro games is what's got me sold on the whole thing and got me hooked. Like, I just can't stop. Awesome. But we'll see, because there's some interesting things happening in the scene.
It's exploding. Like, it's been very wild to see, because like, I'd had interest in those, some of these handhelds, for a long time, and I just had never, for whatever reason, I just never, you know, went for it and got one. Yeah. And I think it was maybe it was Mech DIY or one of these retailers just randomly emailed me and they were like, hey, do you want to look at this thing? And I was like, why not? Part of me was like, my channel's not going to care about this. This is totally off topic. But time and time again, I proved myself wrong with my instincts are terrible. So I was like, we'll go for it. And it did really well. It kind of blew my mind that it wasn't necessarily my subscriber base, but I think that enough of my people watched it to signal to YouTube to send it out to other people.
Yeah.
And then next thing you know, I'm like, man, this thing got, you know, 20 or 30,000 views. Like, this is crazy. Like, and then, you know, just really was kind of eye opening that, you know, I had that thought of like, man, if you're getting into YouTubing now and you can really like go hard on this stuff, you could build something in this space. Like, there is, there's something there.
For sure. Yeah. I just thought of something now. One of the reasons why I think those did so well for you is because you did have those good videos on the Surface Duo. And the Surface Duo is like a crossover device that a lot of guys did DS emulation on, you know?
Oh yeah.
So I think there was a link in terms of the algorithm going, okay, this is kind of the same topic. And then it just sent it out to everyone.
Yeah, that's, you know, you mentioned vanity metrics earlier. I remember a long time ago, someone I was talking to was like, oh, your subscriber number is really a vanity metric. Like you can go viral and get a million views with, you know, 100 subscribers, which is true. But it's I don't think it is a vanity metric necessarily, because if you've got, I guess if you've got 40,000 subscribers and none of them like really watch your content, then yeah, it's a vanity metric. But if you've got that many and you've got, let's say there's 1,000 people that watch anything you post, that's huge. Because if you post a video and that and for 2 days nobody watches it, YouTube buries it. It's like, well, that's nothing. We just move on. But if you can get the ball rolling, get some momentum, then you can do something. And even when I've broken into other spaces, like I've recently started covering the Meta Quest devices, because literally the Vision Pro made me excited, but I'm not going to buy a $3,500 headset because that's insanity.
Get the next best thing.
Yeah, I'll get the other one, and I'll answer the question of how does it compare, right? And so it's weird. I'll post these videos, and for the first 2 days, it'll maybe do 1,000, maybe 1,500, maybe 36 hours in, and then it'll do this. It'll take off, and then it'll have 10,000 after 3 days. It'll do, 6,000-7,000 in day three or day four. And it's because there was some forward momentum from my loyal subscriber base just to get the ball rolling. So I don't believe that it's subscriber. It's important. If you've got some, you got to have your loyal viewers. They absolutely make a channel go.
That's true. And that's why I think YouTube is an excellent platform, because I mean, when I go to my little app, the studio app, it's constantly encouraging me to create content for my followers. So it's picked up who watches me regularly. There's a few handful of guys that I know by name, and I see them regularly, but it's constantly encouraging you to do that, because they know that that is what's going to grow you and the platform and everything, because you know, everyone wins that way.
Yep, definitely.
It's really good. Yeah. Okay, so let's switch gears. So retro gaming, have you received any devices recently?
Yeah, you actually mentioned the 35XXH, I think, last, and I got that maybe 2 weeks ago or something like that. And I actually quite like it. It's pretty good. The stock OS is still terrible, but there's some interesting alternatives out there already that I think are pretty good. But I really like the form factor. It kind of immediately surprised me that I feel like I kind of preferred that form factor over the Game Boy style one. I don't know exactly what it is, but I kind of dug it.
Yeah, because I'm a vertical fan. Like the Miu Mini Plus is one of my favorites.
Yep.
Like I enjoy that. But for some reason, when that arrived, I was like, this hardware is lovely. I really like the H. Interesting fact there. So you mentioned the software, and now there's the Kariki team are working on that Batocera port, or whatever you call it. I don't know much about development. So there's that. And I haven't tested it yet. So I'm going to test it for my review that's coming up. But what I didn't realize was the reason why it took so long for that Batocera thing to come out for the RG35XXH is there's quite a lot of drama behind the scenes of devs getting fed up with Anmanic. I was watching one of Retro Game Core's videos, and he gave a little story at the end of his video explaining the whole cycle of what's happened with Anmanic. And so as they've progressed, like, they have the community to thank for their growth. Those early days, like the RG350 and all that, those devices were great because of the devs. I mean, it had OpenDingX on it, which was awful. And it was great because it could play stuff, but it wasn't a user-friendly experience anyway. So the devs saved that device. And then they just made everything closed source. And the devs have been trying to get to open, them to open it up to them for years now.
Yep.
And I think a lot of them just gave up. And so
why you would do that? Like, if you're talking about like a handheld from, you know, Sony or Nintendo, well, yeah, of course it's going to be closed off because you don't want people running homebrew on it and stuff like that and pirating games. You know,
they're shipping it with bad software. Okay, I don't, Shem like called me out. He was like, it's not that bad software, but it's not good enough. Like for the amount of time they've been making these devices, their hardware is like here, and their software's here, you know, and the devs take it up like to that level. So
that's the point, though, that random consumers make better software than they, that's, so you can say like, well, yeah, it's not that bad. And yeah, it's not that bad, but random people make something better. So that's not good enough. Like,
yeah. And this is a prime example. The BU Mini Plus Onion OS is just phenomenal. It is the best emulation software for a low end device on the markets. And it took this device from, their software was okay, but with Onion OS, it is an exception. It's my favorite small device still because of Onion OS.
Yeah. Yep, so, I would definitely agree. That software experience makes a big difference. Now, I actually did install that Batocero, however you pronounce it.
Okay, did you test it?
Yeah, I've tested it on the H. It's got some rough edges, but it's, to me, even with the rough edges, I was like, oh, well, this is where I'm going. Not, there's some things that aren't quite perfect for sure, and you'll dig in and probably find more stuff than I did. But it was, to me, an improvement for sure.
Yeah.
It's the right direction.
Yeah, it started out as a performance project. Like they were trying to see how far, because with the RG35XX, Anbernic locked a whole, I think they locked off the GPU or something, but in the software, they limited the device. And so they were like, let us try fix this. And they did. And so all of a sudden it was running like these games that it couldn't run before. So that's how that one started. So definitely performance-wise, it's much better.
Crazy.
So you say you are full-time YouTube. This is your job.
Yep, this is the job. I quit my full-time job about a little over 3 years ago now. And I've been doing it ever since. It was a leap of faith, but that might not even be quite right. But it was definitely a leap of some sort that was made.
You leapt.
I leapt in some direction. Yeah, I went from, it's kind of funny because I think most people that like know me from YouTube and stuff would be surprised by this. But like I'd worked my way up. I don't know if you've got one of these where you're from, but there's a car parts retailer called Advance Auto Parts.
Okay.
And they just sell car parts. Just whatever you have at the car parts retailer, substitute them in. It's the same thing. Okay. And I'd worked my way up there, and I wanted to, as you do, you want to climb the corporate ladder, and I'd worked my way up to being a general manager of a distribution warehouse, and I had like 20-something people under me, and I got where I was. That's where I was. I was like, that's where I want to get to. I want to be one of the guys, instead of wearing a black shirt like a normal worker, I want to be in a gray shirt. That means I'm in charge. And I got my gray shirt and, did that. And man, like sometimes you hear about people that like they, not that this is the same thing, but I guess it took me just as long. So maybe it is. But you talk to people that, finish their PhD, they give their dissertation, and then they're just like super depressed afterwards because they're like, now what? Like, I'm not just
going to make work towards like, this thing. I'm not sure what this thing is.
Right. And now what do I do? And it was kind of a similar thing where I got there and I just wasn't like, man, like this ain't it. Like, I'm not like, I don't know what else to do now. And honestly, it was, it's my wife, having conversations with her, and she encouraged me. We both knew what I wanted to do, like what my dream job would be. Mm. And it's this. And, we were lucky enough to be, financially in a decent place. We both worked a ton and both had decent jobs and put money away. We don't have kids. We don't have an expensive mortgage. So like, and it was like, okay, like I'm going to do this. The strategy was I'm going to do this full time for a year. And if it totally blows up in my face, I'll go get a real job again. Mm. And so I did it for a year and it didn't blow up in my face. I didn't make a lot of money, but you could see a trajectory. Yeah, so it stuck around. And year two, I made enough to, basically be like a little better than a minimum wage worker, like a couple dollars an hour more than minimum wage. And I was like, hey, I didn't care. I was like, I made something. I don't
minimum
care.
Wage doing the thing you love.
Is better than where I was making pretty good money and not being happy working, it was a salary position too. So it was 50 hours a week minimum, which normally meant closer to 60. I was there all the time. So I was like, yeah, I'm happier with less money in my pocket because of what I'm doing. And then of course, year three, it jumped up a good amount and I'm in the territory of making what I was as a, running the old hub for Advance. So now I'm like,
that's great. Well done.
If I stay right here from here on, Fine.
Yeah, you're kind of plain sailing now. Yeah.
I mean, it's a good place to be. Can't really complain, you know. Like I said, we've hit that point where I don't really need anything to change. It's not, I don't give the impression that I'm like, you know, living large. Like I'm, you know, I'm definitely definitely not. But I also there was some luck involved, right? So like I bought my house in 2011, which mm-hmm. was during just the tail end of a pretty substantial housing market crash in the here United States. So I got a good deal on it. My mortgage is not expensive. My cost of living, like we can scrape by on like a stupidly small amount of money just because like we both kind of grew up, you know, on the poorer side. So, you know, there was a time when we were both working full time as, you know, in management in retail that we were, you know, we felt like we were rich. Like, this is crazy. Like,
yeah, we have money.
Yeah. It's like we were above the median household income for, you know, for the United States. And it's just the two of us. We were like, man, we're cooking, but we also weren't happy. Like it was kind of miserable. So now I do this, which is funny because I said before I was working like 50, 60 hours a week. There's no telling how many hours a week I spend on this channel. If you count in just like keeping up with the news, reading articles, watching stuff, I would kind of be doing anyways, but it's all like towards the channel now.
Yeah.
There's no way it's not significantly more than that. But I enjoy doing it, so it doesn't feel like work in the same way. So just, you know, we did something that, you know, most societies will tell you you can't do. We took a step backwards to be happy.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult for me in a fairly conservative country. Like, I'm 43 years old and I'm doing what I do. I'm not full-time YouTube, but I've got like a creative business. So I take photos and videos for social media and then I do this. So like my mom still doesn't really understand what I do. And it's reaching a point now where I'm actually making a decent living, but I don't think everyone appreciates my career and thinks, you know, I think some people look at me and go, you know, he's a 43-year-old man, he should go get a job kind of thing, you know.
Oh yeah.
So I do grapple with that sometimes.
It's super weird whenever I meet people out in the world and it's what people do. Oh, what do you do? And I'm like, it's such a weird thing for, like, I feel self-conscious about it. I'm like, I post videos on YouTube and they're like, really? I'm like, yeah. Or like when I quit my job, like I was, you know, kind of, you know, I'd say I was buddies with my district manager, my boss. And, you know, when I told him, he was like, well, you know, what's the plan? I told him, you know, what I was going to try to do. Yeah, it's weird to be like, yeah, that's what I'm doing. Like you're quitting this like stable job you worked for to like try and post videos about phones on the internet. And you think that's going to work, but I mean, it has. So like who's laughing now, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
But not that he laughed. He didn't laugh. He was cool about it.
But it's not a good metric when it's the kids at my daughter's school that think I'm cool.
Right. Like, right.
Okay.
Right.
I am just a man child, but anyway. You know,
that's the thing though, man, is like, I was thinking about this the other day, like I'll be 35 in September. So I'll be in my mid 30s. And I was talking to my sister about this because she's 10 years younger than me. And I was telling her that it's bizarre to me that she just turned 25. I'm like, in my mind, you are still a 10-year-old child. You never progress past that. You aren't married. You didn't buy a house. This is make-believe. I don't feel like I'm in my 30s. I don't know what I feel like I am, but I feel the same as I did when I was in my 20s, you know? And there's just this weird societal thing where it's like, well, this age, you have to do this, then you have to do that. We're going back to my counterculture thing. I'm like, how about no? How about I do something else? Because like, why do I have to do those things? I don't want to do those things. I'm just not. So
Yeah, that's why I say in my context, because it is quite conservative here, I do sometimes feel like a square peg in a round hole. But that's years ago. I kind of realized when you go online, you can connect with people who have a similar feeling about the world as you. And that helped me a lot because I have always felt a little bit kind of spare in the world that I exist here. I've never really felt like fits in, and that's helped me a lot. And being part of this little retro gaming community as well, like, it's crazy getting onto the, maybe that's one of the motivations for the podcast, getting onto a call with someone like yourself, someone like Shem, Retro Game Core, and talking to these people. Like, for instance, Retro Game Core, he's exactly the same age as me, and hopping on a call with him and being like, okay, he's my age and he's more into this than I am. Like, it's all good, you know. Yeah, just chill. Yeah. Stop judging yourself and be happy and enjoy what you're doing. You're finding some success in it, and just to hell with everyone else, you know.
You may feel alone physically with the people that, you know, like your contemporaries around you, but that doesn't mean you're alone in general. There are people that think like you think somewhere, and you can connect with them. I definitely understand. I mean, you said you're in a conservative country. My country's split, but I am in a very conservative portion of my country. So the idea of like being a creative in the South of the United States is definitely weird, but I do think it's changing because you ask nowadays the average kid, what do you want to do when you grow up? And it used to be like, I want to be a football star, like whatever it was. Now it's like, I want to be a YouTuber. Like, that's what kids want to be now. So give it another decade or so, and we're just going to be like, oh, geez, like, it's not even going to be weird anymore.
Yes. I think. Yeah, let's go. It's already kind of like a career. I mean, there's a couple of kids who've already said to me, you know, like, I think I must do this. And I'm like, yep, here's the roadmap.
Start now.
Just start now. You know, like my daughter wants to make fashion videos, and we started over the holidays. She's so good at it. I mean, I'm introverted. She's extroverted. So like, she's way more well-equipped to do this than I am. So if she's going to start it, she must start it and she must go for it, because she can do so well.
And that's the beautiful thing about starting when you're a kid, is that you can get all of these mistakes out of the way. You can learn on the fly without many people really watching. And by the time like you're at an age where you're like, okay, like this needs to start being something, you probably are pretty good at it by then.
Already seasoned. Yeah.
Right. Or you've learned that you actually don't want to do it and you've moved on to something else, but you've gotten it out of the way when the stakes are on the floor. Like there's no risk involved. It's like, do it now. Do it. Like I said earlier, I wish I had started when I was a kid.
Yeah. And there's always someone ahead of you and there's always someone behind you. Like you're never going to be happy. I think this is like a topic, like a psychological podcast topic you could talk about for like the rest of your life. Yesterday we did, I started Taekwondo. I used to do karate when I was much younger and I like missed out on my black belt grading. So it's like an unfulfilled childhood dream to do that again. And I think last night I got kicked in the ribs and I am like effing sore. Like I'm high on pain meds right now. I couldn't get up this morning. Like I got in the car, like in this like weird pivot motion, and the girl I gave a lift to was like, what the fuck? So anyway, I went to Taekwondo grading. It was really great. And I stand there and I'm going, maybe I'm just too old for this. And then the woman next to me, I find out she's like 50. So she's 7 years older than me. She's doing this thing. She's loving it. And like her wife says to me, like, you know, I'm getting too old for this, but she's older than her wife. Like, you know, so like we're all at different places in our life, and we just got to be, I don't know, just live it as, I don't know what I'm trying to say, but just appreciate where we are. Appreciate where we are and just enjoy it. Like, I mean, you're, how old did you say? Because you're 10 years younger than me. So I'm like, man.
Yeah. No, but you're absolutely right. And it's, and I think a tangent to that is like not comparing yourself. Because like you said, there's always someone in front of you, but there's always somebody behind you too. Like, I'm not like this. This is not, I don't want this to come across as me being like conceited at all, because that's not the point I'm trying to make. But 2 years ago, there were channels that I looked at and I thought, man, if I could be where they are, that would be, I looked up to these people like, man, they've got it figured out. They're so far ahead of me. They're in my rear view now. I've passed them by 15,000, 20,000.
That must feel great. Yeah.
I've cruised past them, and that's not me. I'm not saying anything. These are some like great people, but we're all doing different things, right? Like I'm working at this full time every day and they're not, right?
Yeah.
But it kind of helped me learn, like, you know, looking at people and getting frustrated with yourself because you're not there yet, or you know, like just this idea of then kind of realizing I have now become for some people what those channels were for me.
Yeah.
And it's all relative, man. Like you just have to just take it as it comes and just be who you are, accept it,
enjoy it.
It's all you can do. Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. The cool thing for me is I convert everything into rands. So I'm earning in dollars on YouTube. And so that's a really cool thing. So like all my YouTuber contemporaries in the States are like, oh, you know, if they've got the same amount of subscribers as me, they're not making nearly as much money as I am. So like, it's a really cool feeling to be getting the money on this side and then converting it, timesing it by whatever. Obviously there's a ratios of how much I have to spend to live and all that kind of thing, but definitely I make more than my contemporaries overseas. So that's a cool feeling.
I thought about that. Yeah, that's absolutely right. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Mm. It's one of the motivations behind this whole thing, because I know that if I get to your level, like once I get to yours and like Tech Dweeb's like 40, 50,000 subscribers, I know that I will be earning enough to say, okay, cool, put a hold on my business. Don't take on any more clients because I'm making way more money than I am in my business. And I can just focus on YouTube now. Whereas I think a lot of the, like, a lot of guys only start going full time at your level, whereas I could probably start a bit earlier. That's what I'm trying to say. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And how cool is it to be able to look down the road and go, I can do that. Mm. Like that's doable. I can get there. Like, you know, you can get there. Like that's like such a liberating feeling, and it motivates you because like I said earlier, you work to a goal, you get there and it's done and you're not happy. With this, it never ends, which can, it's like running on a treadmill. It can be good or bad, right?
Yeah,
like,
that's the bad side. Yeah.
There is no end point though. There's no here. Mm. You never arrive. Like there's just more after that. So that can drive you crazy, but it also means there is no summit that you reach and then you feel like you've completed it and you're done and you're kind of bummed out because there's nowhere else to go. You can always keep going, you know, and like I've told people before, it's good and bad, but like, you know, you go to a normal job and you clock in, and which people don't clock in anymore. They may be on a computer, dating myself, but you clock in and you work 8 hours, you make the same thing every day. Right. But with this, it's completely dependent on how much I put in. Right. So like if I want to make more, guess what I do? I just work more. I just post more and I make more. Like it's all me. It's all on me. What I make is what I do. So it's liberating, but it can be a little scary sometimes because like it's hard to take time off. It's hard to be like, I won't post. That means you're not going to make anything.
Yes. Yeah. So you have to work double time to post ahead and all that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But I would say, like talking to all these YouTubers, I say my advice to you is just to celebrate the moments. Like Russ from Retro Game Core told me the story and it like almost chilled me to the core because I set up a 10,000 subscriber live stream with, I've mentioned him a few times now, Shem, who's Retro Breeze. We right neck and neck, like our subscriber, we like, he's ahead and then I'm ahead and then he's ahead. And so we did our 10,000 subscriber thing and we did a big celebration. I got a bunch of YouTubers to send like well done messages and all that. And it felt really great. And then I spoke to Russ and he was like, yeah. And this is when he was just about to hit 400,000 subscribers. And I'm like, he's got it. He's got it made. Yeah. Nick doesn't have to worry. And then he was sitting at dinner with someone who was at a million. And he walked away from that dinner going, what am I even doing? Like, why am
crazy?
I even doing this? Yeah. You know? And then he went ahead and he just celebrated that 400,000. His wife was like, listen, you need to, well, I don't know what they did, went out for dinner or whatever, but you have to celebrate those moments. Otherwise, you feel like you're stuck on a treadmill the whole time.
Yep, absolutely. You, and it's so funny that I feel like those of us that are at least somewhat, I'm not trying to put myself in the same category as him because obviously he's tenfold beyond me, but those of us that have managed to find whatever success means for us in that field, I feel like a lot of us are cut out of similar cloths in a way.
Yes.
And it's funny that so often you'll hear, you know, oh, I was feeling down about this thing, driving myself crazy with various neurosis. And my wife pulled me out of it and helped, you know, told me I got to celebrate or whatever. Like it seems like so many of us have a similar, like there's always that person, that spouse, that partner, whatever it might be, that, like, because I think we're a little crazy to be doing this. I kind of do. Like, it takes a little bit, like, we're a little not right in the head.
The secret's out. So,
yeah, I don't think it's a secret. It's the thing. Like, I think it's public. We're broadcasting it. But yeah, there's always that person that's like, without them, this wouldn't work. Like, it would. Like, and my wife is, if anybody enjoys my channel, they can find my wife on Threads or her YouTube channel and send her a thanks, because if not for her, this would not be a thing. I would not be doing this. It would have cool. never happened.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah, for sure, man. And so I want to talk about that, because when we started chatting, it was quite nice to have you alongside me in that time, because you gave me a lot of advice with YouTube, but then I don't know why. I just felt like our little Twitter connection was very meaningful to me. And I told you about how I'd been diagnosed with ADHD, and you were like, well, I also was late in life diagnosed to be on the spectrum, because you kind of like related, because you said ADHD is kind of comorbid to mm-hmm. your situation. So does that play into your YouTube life? Do you think that's one of the reasons why you're doing what you're doing?
Oh yeah, for sure. For sure. Mm. So one of the biggest things that people, you know, whether it is ADHD or it's ASD, one of the things that is overlapped there is the special interest thing. And you may mm-hmm. see that in your own life as well. But this concept of like, so like for me, I have very few, it's kind of bad. I have very few interests, but the interests I do okay. have are like just locked in, you know, obsessive interests.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, I remember talking to somebody about this a while back, because I eventually made it public on the channel. There was another YouTuber, okay. Kyle Hill, who does like science content, who made a video okay. talking about how he'd just been diagnosed as ASD okay. level 1, which was the same as me. And it really encouraged me, because his story was hilarious, because his story, like, I sent it to my mom because I was like, you got to watch this. And she was like, this guy's the same person as you. Like, the name, you know, is crazy. What's really
crazy?
Crazy
as you are.
Yeah, exactly. What was really weird is that after a little while, he's a much bigger YouTuber. He doesn't know who I am, but a little bit later on, he posted something on Twitter or something that he'd gotten a tattoo on his arm. And I swear to you, it was almost the exact same one that I had.
Crazy.
From the Voyager plaque. It was weird. I was like, this is getting creepy at this point. But anyways, I digress. I was talking to somebody about, you know, after I'd kind of come forward with it and said like, hey, like it is what it is, and there's nothing wrong with it. And, you know, just kind of advocating for just acceptance of it, that some people are just wired differently, and like, it's cool. Like, it's okay to be wired differently. Mm. And, you know, I had some people be like, oh, like, you know, it's funny. Some people kind of got in, some people were like, oh, like I couldn't tell. Looking back, like, you know, I remember commenting or replying to somebody that I was, you know, just kind of jokingly like, I've made like 200 videos on the same phone. Do you think that's normal? Like, is that something a normal person would do? Like, of course there's something going, like, that was a special interest for me. And I'm like,
yes,
you know, you
lack telltale signs.
Yeah. And so, you know, one of the things people seem to value with my channel is that when I latch onto a device, I don't just review it and move on. I dig in and I cover it and I cover it. When there's an update, I talk about it and I serve that community who loves that device. Mm. And the reason I'm able to do that without losing interest is because it's a special interest for me. It's something that I'm not feigning. I'm not putting it on like, oh, he doesn't really care about this phone. He's just doing it for the clicks. No, I do it because I care. Like, it's all genuine. It's all just coming from me.
Yeah. Isn't that an ASD thing? Is just that that brutal honesty. It's really hard not to say the thing that you think.
Yeah. Yeah. That's something that I still struggle with, that it's almost like a stereotype, but it is kind of true. And I think everybody deals with this to some degree, but it's about, it's always about the variation, the levels of things going on. But yeah, the frequency with which I'll just say something that's just factually true in my mind anyways, maybe I'm wrong, but like, I just,
to you, it's the correct thing. Yeah.
Right. And people, whether it's people on the internet or it's people in my personal life, like my wife, that then I'm like, you know, you get a response back that you're like, I've said something wrong and I don't know precisely what it is, But I'll work on figuring it out.
And I figure it out, some feedback.
But I don't know what I've said. And oftentimes it's just like, you know, just the way you say things, like your tone is so flat sometimes.
Yes.
Like, I don't know what you, but then, you know, if you turn around and you try to say things in like a flowery way, then it's like, you're so condescending. Like, I don't know what to do. Yeah. It can be a little bit tough.
That's so funny because yeah. I'm busy watching a show. It's what's that comedian's name? It's called Life and Beth. And the lady who wrote the show, she's definitely modeled the love interest on her husband because she's been open in a stand-up comedy about the fact that her husband was diagnosed with ASD while they were together. And it's such a heartwarming, but all the things that you're saying are all the things that she kind of brings out in this is, you know, like she kind of puts forward this idea that he's a wonderful person to be with because she always knows where she stands with him. Mm-hmm. But but then there's the other thing of like, he doesn't always get the emotional feedback that he's getting. Like, you know what I mean? She's got to physically say that thing. Do you understand? Oh, okay. Yes. I couldn't pick up on your emotional cues, you know?
That's exactly it. Like my wife is very much it's funny because you know, I often joke that, Together we would form one pretty functional human. She's very much heart first. She thinks with her, and she's such a compassionate, like caring, loving person. And I'm all here. It's all intellectual, and I will sometimes miss those other elements of things. And so we kind of contrast each other. And I think together, if we can cooperate, we end up doing quite well for each other, but it is, there's definitely some of that going on.
That's an extreme opposites. But that's the same as us. My whole life, I've obviously ADHD, brains all over the place, can't stick to one thing for longer than 5 seconds. My wife is like the most consistent, most dependable, you know, like as we've grown older, people rely on her. We definitely do compliment each other well. So yeah, like you're saying, going back to that thing of like, in all these stories, there's someone, a partner going, do it.
You have to have that person. Like a big thing for me is, and this is something I've been unraveling over the last, you know, we're talking about, this has been going on for 4 years, getting close to 5 years now since I got my diagnosis, I think. And I'm still figuring things out. There's a profile called PDA, it's pathological demand avoidance. And I'm just now really starting to understand and starting to realize that I'm like, oh man, like I have a, this is me. Like I have a, this is me 100%. And it's, I used to think it was like people that were PDA were people that like were obstinate. It was like, if you tell them to do something, they'll just tell you no, because they don't want anybody to tell them what to do. But it's not necessarily that. It's more a need for control. And that's my problem, or one of my problems, I should say. I need control. So, you know, why did I work towards a general manager role? Because I'm like, the attitude of just let me do it. Like get out of the way. Just let me do it. Like I need to be in charge of this.
Yeah.
I need that control. And that if I'm left to my own devices, I would have stayed with Advance because I was in control. I was settled in. I had my routine. Mm. And once I sink into a routine like that, it's really hard to get me out of it because I do not like uncertainty, you know, like to an extreme extent, maybe we're taking a week off or something. And she's like, let's, you know, drive to this other town that's like, you know, 60, 70 miles away and go to this place. I'm an anxious wreck because I don't know that place. I'm not familiar with the roads. I don't know what the parking's going to be. Like I'll be going on Google satellite, the maps, and looking at the parking garage. And then looking for backup parking garages and backup to the backups because I need to have
a
plan in place and we have an itinerary. And if we go to the aquarium and we're there for too long and it's not lining up with what I start getting stressed out and I'm making myself sound like I'm super like annoying and like high strung. And maybe I am a little bit, but that's, I have to have that control in place. And so,
yeah.
You know, making that leap was nerve wracking, but it also felt good in the sense that I'm completely in control of what I'm doing now. So it does fit. But the biggest problem now is that there's nothing that pushes me out of my bubble anymore.
Yeah.
So I used to have my bubble was bigger. Mm-hmm. Like maybe there was a 40 mile radius in Knoxville that I felt pretty comfortable in. Yeah. Now maybe it's like 20 miles because I've just not done it. I've had that ill regression. Mm. So I'm having to kind of like, you know, I'm needing to find ways to work out those muscles again because I've allowed them to atrophy, and it's gotten kind of bad where things that I'm like, okay, that shouldn't be making me this anxious. Like I used to do this. Why is this a problem?
Yeah.
But I've regressed because things have changed. So it can be that superpower in the sense that I wouldn't have my YouTube channel or wouldn't be doing this without it. I truly believe that. But there are pitfalls as well. There are negatives to it. So, you know, everybody's got Taekwondo. There.
Just watch out for your ribs.
I think we're kind of the same too. We don't have a lot of padding to take those impacts, right? Like,
That's exactly what I thought. I was like, I have nothing to protect me, man.
It's just, like, there's about this much flesh and then rib. Like, there's nothing there.
I'm like negative body fat. I'm like currently... Yeah. Eating into my muscle somewhere. Like it's just a constant battle for me. But yeah, I literally, totally, there's just ribs here. So I think he just
I totally understand.
Away from the rib.
I did a little bit of back when I was like 16, 17, 18, I did a little bit of Muay Thai and Jiu-Jitsu. Mm-hmm. And it was a lot of fun. And I do miss it. In fact, I play a VR boxing game almost every day for exercise because it's the closest I'm ever going to get to doing that again because I have neck problems. Like if you punched me in the head, I might be paralyzed. Like it might be bad. I just have, I've got some weird,
maybe not that good.
Misalignment stuff going on. It's hereditary. Mm. It is what it is.
But okay.
Yeah. I do really miss I'm a very competitive person. Mm. Very, very competitive. I did enjoy it though, but you're absolutely right though. That some of those impacts. I remember first learning how to, I don't know how they do it in Taekwondo, but if you were, someone was throwing a kick at your legs, typically back in the day, you would kick right above the knee to the outside of the knee. And the way you would block that or check it is you turn your leg outside and you raise your knee up. So you go shin to shin. That's how you block the strike.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah.
And, you know, going back and doing, you know, the first few of those, learning how to do that was just unbelievable. I mean, you're just in so much pain. But
you've got to condition that part of your body.
Mm. Yeah, because it's not going to damage anything. I mean, I guess you could break your leg, but it's got to be a heck of an impact to do that. Otherwise... Mm. You're better off than getting hit in a nerve, which is your calf. There's a nerve down there or, you know, whatever. Okay. So they would tell you to turn out and go shin to shin. And, you know, it's funny that back then, like, you know, I would do that. It would hurt. But like, man, like I didn't even bruise back then. Now, like my dog steps on my leg and I'm like, why am I bruising? Like, what is happening to my body? Just falling.
Exactly. Like,
it's crazy.
Yeah, but that's the thing. When I did karate, I would get injuries. But it'd be like a week of my life. I'd be like, oh, whatever, breeze. Yeah. Now, I know that this is 6 months. This is 6 months. I'm not going to be able to go running anymore. It's just like I'm effed up.
It's bizarre, man. It really is weird. Like for the longest time, like I'd be around my family. There's a lot of kids in the family. I'd be like on the trampoline with them and stuff. And like, man, cardio. Like I could do whatever I wanted. And now part of it's because I'm just more sedentary. Like I'm just like, I'm right here too much of the day. But, you know, I've kind of had those wake up calls where I won't say what the number was because people would probably be irritated with me. But I started gaining a little bit of weight for the first time in my life.
Yeah.
And I was like, I was filming a video about a drone. And so I was away from here. I was standing outside. And I was like a side profile. I was like, what is happening to me? I'm like my shirt's not sitting flat anymore. And it really bothered me. And I dieted for a little while and got back to a good place. And I'm I try to stay in shape as best I can. I do.
Yeah.
I do some cardio and but it's, man, it went from being like no maintenance required here. Eat whatever you want, do whatever you want. Nothing hurts. You're just indestructible to like, ain't that way anymore. No, things have changed.
Yeah.
fall down.
Yeah, you got to keep moving though. Like, I think that's the most important. That's why we're having that discussion with those friends at Taekwondo. Cause you're like, it's the balance of like, I don't know. Am I old, too old for this shit? Or like, cause it's really good for your body. You're moving, yep. You're stretching. Like Taekwondo is brilliant for like stretching your tendons and everything.
Yeah.
So yeah, but it is full contact. So that's why we're like, you know, are we too old? I don't know. But
you're
really enjoying it. So
you're dead on though. As soon as you stop being active, man, you lose it so fast.
Exactly. And my wife's grandmother has been walking since she moved from Zimbabwe, which is north of South Africa. And she moved here many years ago, but she's been walking ever since I've known her. Like she's just, I mean, every single day she has a walking group and she walks. And I think that's what one of the things that just kept her going all these years. Cause now she's turning, she's like getting old now, but she's still looking good, feeling good. And it's cause she just hasn't stopped moving, you know? I think as soon as you, I mean, I've had people in my family, you know, like older people, you just have them, you like have this memory of them. And now that I'm older, I'm thinking back and I'm going, damn it, they actually couldn't have been that old and they died and they must have been like 65, you know, and all they did was just sit and watch TV all day.
So, well, and you see too, you know, it's weird how I've known several people that, you know, worked and worked and worked, they retired and were okay. And within 3 or 4 years of retirement, they're gone. And it's like, how does that happen? But I think you're dead scary, on. Yeah. You've got to keep moving. And that's, I try. Of course, we just went, we're almost into the spring here, right? It's been, it's been a little on the cold side, but during when it gets warmer, I do a lot of walking around the neighborhood. It helps me think. I don't know if you find this to be true as well, but sometimes I'll be sitting here and I'm like, I need to make a video and there's nothing, can't think of anything, nothing's flowing. I'll go walk like a mile and a half or a couple miles around the block. And by the time I'm halfway through it, I'm walking double time to get back to the house to film the video that I thought of. Cause I'm like, there it is. I got it. So exercise is huge, not just for your body, but just for my ability to think most of the time.
Mental health. Oh, totally. I'm like, I have to. And I forget that sometimes. And then I get in a rut and I'm like, oh, should I even be doing YouTube? As soon as I think that thought, as soon as I think like, should I, whatever, stop doing this thing, then I know. Because everything I'm doing in my life is meant to be there, you know, like it's been well thought out. I know I'm supposed to be doing these things. As soon as I think I shouldn't be doing it, I know that I just need some exercise.
Yeah. Those intrusive thoughts though, man, they'll get you. they'll get after you sometimes. I think we all deal with that sometimes, but man, there's nothing worse than ruminating, just sitting there. Having these cyclical negative thoughts, you gotta, and exercise is such a great way to break that cycle, get up and move.
Yeah, for sure, man. Shane, this has been brilliant. Like, I think next time I'm definitely want to get a VR headset. I think next time we need to talk about VR things. Feels like that's the next topic for another day. It's been great chatting. And I really appreciate that connection we had a while back. It meant a lot to me. And I wish you all the best with your channel.
Thank you. And I'm pleased to hear that. Anytime I can have any small positive impact on the world, that makes me feel good. You know, it's good to hear something like that.
Cool. Thanks, man.
Cool. Thanks for having me.